Anyway, the thing is, he told me that I have an intense activity and meditation. And I've seen that it's been a great blessing. But if I didn't have the meditation, the activity would have been just restlessness and wouldn't have taken me anywhere. Each one of you should realize that the activity you do for God is a blessing. It's not a misfortune. It's not just something you have to do to keep body and soul together. It's rather something that you can do to help uplift people. Everything you do should be done in a divine way, so that when you cook, you're putting your energy into it. You're putting your joy into it. When you work with people, don't think, I want to say this or I want to do that. Think rather, what does God want me to do? How can God inspire me? I've seen many times, I used to see in counseling people, that they would ask me things and I would say, well, I really don't know. I don't want to just talk off the top of my head. I didn't know. But the odd thing I found in every case was that when I really admitted to myself, I don't know, I did know. In other words, when you can relax enough, suddenly then God can inspire you. Suddenly you do know what to say and what to do. Now this is a wonderful blessing. It's something that Kriya Yoga does definitely help us in. But Kriya Yoga is helpful on all levels. Here I am coughing my lungs out. I shouldn't say it. And yet Kriya Yoga helps you physically too. People who practice Kriya, some doctor in Mill Valley or Marin County somewhere was saying that he's had several Kriya Yogis as patients. He said that they're much more healthy than other people. And it's true. You just, when your energy is right there, you somehow fill your whole body with energy. Same thing with the energization exercises. Everything you do ought to be a manifestation outward from this spinal energy. And that means the more you act outwardly, the more you should do it from this center. You see, most people act from here, from there. I've always remembered an experience I had on the ski slopes many years ago, where there was a lady on the slope who just, her way of getting down, she'd never been on skis before maybe, was to sort of cross the slope, fall down, cross the slope again, fall down, each time putting her skis back on. It was quite a laborious process. But I said, you know, I've learned something really helpful. See if this won't help you. I said, instead of thinking, as you're told, to turn by, move your elbows this way and your hips this way and your knees that way and so on, instead of that, just, I found it very helpful to feel that I'm centered in my spine and that all my movements come naturally from that center. I saw her a few falls later at the top of the slope. She was enthusiastic. She said, wow, it works. She said, I'm falling much less now. And it's the truth. I have seen in everything, if you look at somebody who's good at sport, he's not all thumbs. He's centered in himself. Whatever the sport is, there's always a center from which everything comes. The same thing with your studies, the same thing with writing, with composing, with cooking. Cooking is an important thing. It's a wonderful way of sharing your energy with others. Master loved to cook because he told me it's a way of serving people. And when he cooked, he didn't taste the food. Well, they don't normally in India anyway, the Hindus anyway. But he would taste it here at the spiritual eye. And he'd know just how much curry powder or this or that to put in. It always was just exquisite. But the most of all was that it had his vibration. And you'd finish eating what he gave you and you just felt great. Well, when I read about women who feel that they're demeaned by being in the kitchen, I think that, whereas I don't mind any woman who doesn't want to be in the kitchen, I don't like them putting down women who do, because cooking is a great art, and it's one that a lot of men enjoy too. It's not necessarily a feminine thing to do, but it is an honor and a joy to be able, and that's why mother's cooking always seems to taste better. I've been into good restaurants, but because the consciousness wasn't good, I came out, after all this tasty food, feeling heavy and sort of uncomfortable. But mother's food, apart from the fact that you got used to it by growing up with it, it's more than that. She has love for her family and cooks with that love. It's a beautiful thing. Well, this is how we should do whatever we do. Do it with consciousness. And consciousness, above all, starting here in the spine. If we can get the world thinking this way, somebody wrote to me in Assisi one time saying, that shouldn't Ananda be more involved in ecology? And I wrote him back, I said, listen, if the whole world lived the way Ananda does, there would be no need for an ecological movement. We just would automatically live in harmony with nature and in respect for everything. Everything you do then, always refer it back to your inner self. It's a good thing even, and I don't want you to do it so deeply you drive up a telephone pole, but do kriyas a little bit here to sort of remind you that this is where you're coming from when you're driving or when you're out with people at the office, at the desk. Just sort of return to your center. Live from that center. It's amazing how it can change your whole outlook. When people are all excited, if you can have that center, somehow they don't feel excited in the same way. You can have a calming influence on others. And if people get you upset, well, don't do it obviously, blatantly, at them, you might say. But just quietly go within, and you'll see that you're not going to be upset like that anymore. That when you have this inner calmness, then that restlessness and anxiety and anguish and so on, they go away. It's also true that when you're emotional, don't try not to do your kriyas then, unless you do them somewhat superficially. But the emotions will also block your kriya. Therefore, as Jesus said, when you go to the temple and have something against your brother, make peace with your brother first. So it's true, we need both. We need to, if we're going to sit down and worship, whether through kriya or any other thing, and our minds are seething with rebellion about something somebody did to us or whatever, it would be good to try to square it up with others. That's why, again, it's so important to live in this world and not just withdraw from this world. That when we have this pairing of the two, then we find that when we go into the meditation, our meditations are deeper. Otherwise, the mind can sort of roam around restlessly. I remember also an occasion when, and I think I mentioned this recently, when I had to earn the money to pay for the building at the meditation retreat. And the costs were mounting far more than I thought we could. I knew I'd have to do it, but I didn't have it. I had to go out and earn it. And I was really, I have to admit it, with regret, yes, but it's the truth. I felt a little resentful of Divine Mother. I said, Divine Mother, I never wanted money. I've never been interested in money. Why do you force me to have to think so much about earning it in order to make this thing for you? Can't you just give it to me? Well, she didn't, and she did. But she had to do it through the work and not sort of bypassing the work. And so I did. I did it. In fact, I rather resented having to do it. I did it anyway. But I found that my gain at the end was not that I could get the buildings and buy the property and all those things. Those weren't the real gains. The real gain I had was I received was the inner strength I gained by doing what I had to do. Whether I liked it or not was secondary. It had to be done, therefore I did it. If you do what has to be done, don't think that it's unspiritual. Do it for God, and you'll see that everything can be spiritual. Even fighting on the battlefield, as Krishna said. The whole theme of the Bhagavad Gita is it's set in a battlefield to show us that life is a battle. Not a battle, usually, that you can win by with swords and guns, but nonetheless, you have to overcome the darkness in you. This means energy. Above all, the movement of the energy up the spine and down the spine until gradually you become so balanced that nothing can shake you. And Master said that you must learn to become unshaken amidst the crash of breaking worlds. I mean, that sounds very nice as a piece of poetry, but you just think of an earthquake. Many of you have lived in an earthquake. When the ground itself starts to move, the first moment for many people is one of panic. That's nothing compared to the whole world being shaken up in a huge cataclysm. But a man who is deeply spiritual, he won't be touched by that. Just let it happen. Mind you, you can't die. How many things have you gone through? For how many incarnations? It all passes. Always remain centered in yourself. In this way, we can bring the world itself back to that kind of equilibrium from which it has been torn away by so many conflicting forces. If you were to come to this planet today, from a planet where everybody did Kriya Yoga and lived in communities and loved God and all those things, walked down the streets of New York, I think you'd be appalled. We get used to it in a way, but nonetheless, you can't easily get used to meanness, pettiness, cruelty, anger, selfishness. They seem an outrage to human nature. And so it is that if we pull back and look at the world around us, we see that it's in a state of chaos right now. I don't think that there's been any really great work in any artistic field. And the arts are a very good thermometer, you might say, or barometer of the state of the human being, of human nature. The drama, it's all cynical, worldly, taking for granted things like desire for revenge, hatred, anger. The music, well, there's just nothing inspiring about it. I was at a symphony in Rome a couple of years ago, or 1 year ago, I don't remember exactly, and at the Santa Cecilia, and they were playing some modern piece. I think it was by Menotti. I don't know whether they literally brought pots and pans from the kitchen to create their sound, but it sure sounded like that. This bedlam going on, no meaning to it, no structure, nothing. Just the more they can irritate you, the more successful they think they are. And just about then, I had left my cell phone on by accident, and Alan phoned me. Well, you know, it didn't mean a thing. I mean, so one more noise. Nobody even turned around. It was a fairly loud ring. I picked it up and said, call me back, and put it down. But just cacophony, and that's what you get used to. And so people begin to think, well, it's sort of like the emperor's suit of clothes. It must mean something. So therefore, I'll say it. It's good. And, you know, here you are watching a painting at a museum, and you don't know what it's about. But you look right. Somebody else is looking left. And you sort of raise your eyebrows, and he thinks, oh, you've approved of it. Yeah, it's nice, they say. Then the person on your left sees that these two people over here, so they start getting excited. And mind you, there's a very sort of a good demonstration of how in you are. If the more preposterous something is, the more you can find something nobody else can see. And so, if enough people all crow about this great work of art, everybody's raving about it. Picasso, I don't like the guy at all. And I don't know how you feel about him, but I felt from the first time I saw him, I thought, this is a con job. You can't persuade me that that's art. He's very skilled, no doubt. But he did have a good sense of humor. He put out this new painting, and all his coterie were gasping and marveling and saying how beautiful and how wonderful, and did you see this new painting of Picasso's and so on. When the Fuhrer was at its peak, he told them that his pet monkey had done it. I really think that's a classic story. Because, indeed, what consciousness is there behind... Well, okay, what consciousness is there behind a face that is sort of like this? You know, completely divided. Well, his Ida and Pingel are totally out of whack. That's all I could say. To be original does not mean to do something different. It means to do something that comes from your own origin. And originality is probably even defined in the dictionary. It's certainly the common understanding of it, to do something nobody else has ever done. And so almost all art that you see is somebody trying to say, look at me, I've done something new. And it creates a whole consciousness of chaos. You see people walking through the streets like this, each one trying to be his little important Eurystrister in his hen yard. How much better it would be and how much more beautiful it is, and how wonderful it is to go to ashrams and see there people living in themselves. Everything they do, everything they say, all their movements in some way are projections of this inner self. But again, if you only have the teaching, if you only have the principles, be kind, be generous, be humble, be all those things, but you don't know the how, you don't know the secret of it, it's very difficult to keep it. You don't find many monks and nuns in monasteries who have that. Some you do, because after all, what they're doing ought to bring them all in tune. But they don't know how to do it. Most of them think, well, Jesus will do it for me, or Krishna will do it for me. You know, when Bhaktivedanta came to America, he came as a representative of a tradition. He himself was quite centered. But he came with that thought. It was painful to see it, really. Anybody, this is the tradition there, anybody who chants the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And anybody who chants that mantra will be saved. He believed it. He was wrong. In fact, he said to Allen Ginsberg, and Allen Ginsberg told me, where did I go wrong? Because so many of his followers didn't become transformed. He took them as crooks. They remained crooks. Why? Because he was mistaken. It isn't just chanting Maha Mantra. There's got to be this inner consciousness. Unless it comes from inside, sure, you have to follow the yamas, niyamas. He went wrong even in that. But you have to go further and further. Asana doesn't mean doing the yoga postures. It means being calm, centered, relaxed in yourself. Meditating in that position. Pranayama means control of the energy, which you can only get when you're centered. Pratyahara, interiorizing the mind, can come only when you've got this energy uplifted. And then from that follow these other stages of dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. But we can practice all of them to a certain level in everything that we do, and we should try to. In other words, no, you can't go into samadhi easily. Not very many people can. But you can have that consciousness of it's all one. I'm a part of that oneness. The more you're centered in yourself, the more you can bring that energy to a focus, the more you can internalize it and then let it come outward too. So that when you're talking, when you're writing, when you're involved in anything outward, you feel it's an expansion of your consciousness. Samadhi is an inward expansion. This is an outward expansion, and both are necessary. They need to be expansions from the center outward to the periphery. We need to see that no one defines that circle. As Master put it, the divine vision is center everywhere, circumference nowhere. I've always told the people here at Ananda, don't think of Ananda only as your community. Our neighbors also are a part of our community. What helps us but hurts them is not going to help us either. We need to think of the welfare of all. We need to think of the people in other sides of the world. We need to recognize when Master gave us that technique of meditation, he said it was almost as important as the techniques themselves. Visualize an expanding light and feel a whole world bathed in that light. You know, the Gayatri Mantra has the same purpose. May that light bathe and enlighten everyone. Pray for the world. This is what Jesus also was saying, if you have something against your brother. What he was also saying is spread that love. Spread that light to all. When you meditate, one of the dangers of Kriya Yoga, Raja Yoga, every path has its danger. The danger of this path is that it can make you self-centered in a bad way. You're going into yourself, you become selfish. You're going into yourself and you begin to become indifferent to other people. Sort of, well, you're suffering, that's your problem. I've seen Raja Yogis do that. It doesn't excite me. I see that it doesn't work, and it doesn't make them radiant people either. But when you can include others, when there's no circumference, everybody is a part of your reality. That's a kind of samadhi. We need to practice that principle. Dharana, being able to fully focus on whatever you do, is very necessary, so that you're not sort of, you know how people are with the radio or the television, twiddling the dial all the time, never see a program because they keep on twiddling to see what else is on. Well, that's how many people's minds are, and television is probably one of the worst influences around. I was in this barber shop in Rome where the barber had the television on, possibly to entertain the customers, more likely because he was cutting his hair like this. I don't know. But what struck me, I watched it for a while. They didn't hold a single scene more than 2 seconds. I thought, what kind of minds are restless if they see something for more than 2 seconds? This is what the world does for you or to you. It makes you so restless you can't settle on anything. Kriya Yoga, automatically, it's not a question of believing. It's a question of doing. When you do this, you automatically feel this calmness. Now, this is where the religions of the world have gotten away from what religion is all about. In the beginning, the Christian religion was one of meditation, service and meditation. They had communities then. They had individuals seeking God without permission from the Pope to do so. They had the thought that anybody can find God. He doesn't have to become a hermit, although anybody who wants to dedicate himself so sincerely as to become a hermit certainly deserves respect. But you notice that the early church so completely got rid of Gnosticism, you almost never heard of the Gnostics except as this group of heretics, and so completely trashed the whole idea of communities that they ceased to exist. It was only when monasteries came up that were completely subservient to Rome that Rome was able to feel, now we have them under the control, we can encourage them as long as they do what we say. This is the direction of institutions. When Master said he came here to bring back original Christianity, what he was saying is, that he was bringing that Gnostic movement back, not in its bizarre exaggerations, but the truth is that the church pointed out the bizarre exaggerations and left out the real validity of those people seeking their inspiration between them and God, not between them and a priest who then carries messages to them from God, presumably. Those communities and Kriya, Master said that that Jesus practiced Kriya or a technique very like it. He said the same thing of St. Paul. There's a very interesting tradition in Spain that Jesus on the cross, just before he gave up his body, his head went like this. Well, that's Kriya Yoga. That's the highest technique of Kriya, where you leave your body. With that, I'm not going to teach it to you because you're getting it tonight, or you haven't even had Kriya yet, so I'm not allowed to. You know, when Roy Davis, for example, puts this in books, I think he has absolutely no right to do such a thing. When the Master says it shouldn't be done, we should do what the Master says. And when you receive Kriya, don't think, well, now I've got it, I can just give it to all my friends. Don't. Do what the Masters give you, because this is how it should be done. When you practice it any other way, it's not going to go right, and you're not going to be helped. It has to be done in the right way, with the right blessing. It's not something you can learn from a book. But when Master told us these teachings and this technique, practice the way he taught. There are different teachers who teach different ways. Let them be. But this is the way our Master taught it, and we know it's valid. Yes, he made changes occasionally. I'd been with him less than a month, and he was dictating the Kriya lessons out at 29 Palms. And he was saying that because we used to do it raising the energy through the spine, bringing it down outside the back of the spine. And right at that dictation, he said, well, that's the way my Master taught it, but I'm going back to the way Lahiri Maharshi taught it, which is going down through the spine also, and may my Master forgive me. But he had the right to make that change, as Sri Yukteswar had the right to make that change over what Lahiri Maharshi taught. Don't think because Masters can do it that every Tom, Dick, and Harry can decide, well, I kind of like doing the Kriya this way. Some people have sometimes come to me with all sorts of fantasies as to how they do this Kriya. I said, no, do it right. Be orthodox in these things. It's important to be, because there are reasons for what they've taught. Now, with the practice of Kriya being sort of removed from circulation, you find that all the emphasis went toward humility. Well, of course, superiors love humble subordinates. Obedience, yeah, they love obedience. All the virtues that are designed to make you just sort of a non-entity, and they direct the whole show, these are what are called Christian virtues. If you look down, look into it fairly closely, you see that a lot of them are based really on control of other people. True humility, true obedience, means openness to God. It's not an easy one. I was very obedient to Daya, but I gradually began to see that she's saying things that don't agree with what I know Master said to me. And I didn't know what to do about it. Well, he solved it for me by getting me thrown out on my ear, and thank God. But I really think that it's important to understand that our real obedience must be inward. When I asked Master, he said, do you give me your unconditional obedience? And I said to her, well, said to him, sir, what if I think you're wrong? And he said, I would never ask anything of you that God didn't tell me to ask. Well, that is a guru. An institutional head doesn't think that way. An institutional head thinks, usually, we don't do it that way here. because I've kept that example so strongly. But they usually think, how can we get this work out of that person? You know, Daya wanted to put me in the print shop. I said, that's not for me. I said, if you put me there, I know my great talent for machines. The machines would break in a week. I only have to go past the machine and it breaks. It's just not my thing. But they needed somebody in the print shop. That's why she wanted me there. I wouldn't do it, really, because Master didn't tell me that was my work. He said, your work is writing, teaching, editing. So that's what I was trying to do, not printing. But so one could say, well, maybe if you'd printed, you'd have become a better writer. I don't know. All I do know is that the motivation behind most institutional guidance is that we need you for something, not what do you need for your spiritual advancement. Now, true, and this is why we say here, people are more important than things. Always seek, above all, to go and consult your own inner guidance. Now, these things have their own little ways of getting exaggerated. Sometimes I've asked people to do something and they say, well, I'm just waiting for Master to tell me. Well, the point is, Master's got me to tell you. Master's got others here who are in tune with him to tell you. If you think that you want to do it just on your own between you and him, then why be here? Why not go where you can just receive that guidance yourself? But we see that it does work here, and I haven't seen it work very often the other way, because our interest is sharing. I never, when I counsel people, feed them all the stuff up, I've experienced this, and this is what I always tell people. Never. I always try to feel what they specifically need, because to be original with them means to try to feel it from their point of origin. Doing my kriyas helps me by being in tune with my center to be in tune with other people's centers also. One time somebody was doing kriya, and I said, now you're doing it right. I don't know how I knew. I could feel the energy in his spine, and that now he was getting it right. Well, the more you can be centered in yourself, the more you can be in touch with another person's center. And when you try to help them from their center, not from your own. Not from, well, when you've been on the path as long as I have, you'll know. No, wherever they are, that's where they are. And for God's sakes, they may have been on the path many years before, lives before you came, who knows. Everybody, all of us are equally children of the same one God. As Master said to Dr. Lewis when he was going to Los Angeles from Boston, and the doctor was feeling lost because he'd been depending on Master. Master said, never mind what happens to me, Doctor. Don't forget God. And Dr. Lewis said one time, but you can do it. You're the Master. He said, God is everyone's Father. He is our common Father. Another time he said to Bernard, when Bernard said that, he said, what do you think made me a Master? Be centered. The more you have that center, the more you will know what religion is really all about. And I've gone to Christian services and sat there and felt absolutely thrilled with inspiration. And I suspect that if I'd opened my eyes and looked around me, I'd have seen people looking at their watches and whispering and all the usual things that happen. But it was thrilling because I'd loved Christ and I felt Christ inside and in the service, and it was wonderful. We don't need to say, oh, but this is my way. God is everywhere. But the more you live in him, the more you know what religion really is all about. It isn't the Mass that gives you inspiration. It's your expectations of being inspired through the Mass. Is there more to it than that? Maybe. I mean, Teresa Neumann could always tell when a priest had been ordained, when somebody was an ordained priest. There has to be something there. Probably some power was passed on, even by a bureaucratic and businesslike cardinal. Who knows? These are beyond us. I talked to the Bishop of Assisi, and he was saying that you have to accept Jesus Christ as your only Savior. I had told him I love Christ, and we all pray to Christ every day. And he said this, and I said, well, honestly, I have to say that I think my job is to love him. It's his job to decide whether he wants to save me or not. It's a presumption to say, you're my only savior. Will he or won't he? That's up to him. And the same thing with your spiritual path. God doesn't owe you anything. He is you. Why would there be a debt there? Why should he be flattered if you just pray to him and use the right formula and say it in English, of course, the original original language of the Bible. Or like that Frenchman and Englishman who were talking about the wars between their nations, and the Frenchman said, well, how come you win so many battles? And the Englishman said, well, it's because we pray. And the Frenchman said, well, we pray too. The Englishman said, yes, but we pray in English. Well, God doesn't listen like that. He's in you. He is you. And your very kriya is a prayer. So the more you do your kriya as an act of devotion, you know, just as when you do puja before the altar, just as in the Eucharist, there is this offering to the altar, just as in all spiritual rituals, there's some kind of offering, like the fire ceremony. It's a symbol of the fire of energy and love. And you cast these things into the flames and to be burned up. That's objective. That's symbolic. But there should be this inner feeling that I'm offering my energy with that. That's why in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that this is the inner, the true yajna, the true fire ceremony. When you can offer your whole self up to be purified to God and receive back from him his grace to be different, it's a universal truth. It doesn't depend on language, race, culture, religion. Those are all externals. But in yourself, your relationship with God, you've got your altar, portable altar wherever you go, portable temple wherever you go. Everywhere you are, wherever God places you, there you can seek him. There you can know him. Thomas Merton in the Seven Story Mountain talked about these two old women he met in Harlem. And you know, Harlem is not a place of exalted energy. I don't know much about Harlem except what I've read. I do know that one time we came out the wrong exit from the park there, the Central Park, and found ourselves in the middle of Harlem in a motorhome. It was definitely not a safe way to be. And fortunately, the street ahead of us was empty and we could make some speed, because suddenly there were screams of rage from the sidewalk and people pounding after us, wanting to destroy us because we were rich. Well, we weren't rich at all. We just had a motorhome. But that consciousness of I and me and my and hurting other people to get what you want and so on. Here these two women were, and he said they were saints, and I believe him. They were saint in their absolute humility, kindness, wanting to help people, love for God. You can be a saint wherever you are. Somebody said to me recently from SRF are you enjoying living in Italy? I said, yes, I am. But I'm where I feel God and Master want me. And if they sent me to Harlem, I'd be just as happy to go there. Because wherever we are, that is where God has to come to us. Kriya is your sacred ceremony. Your body is your own temple. And even in a prison dungeon, you can still inwardly feel that divine consciousness. You can't be sitting in a crowd going, oh, and E, begin to sound like a donkey. But you can do it inwardly. And to do this inwardly a lot is good. Master said every time you have a little break, go out and practice Kriya three to six times. Anytime you have a pause, don't just think, what can I do now? Just be in yourself. This is how we can change not only ourselves, but indeed, as Babaji and Jesus both working together ordained, we can change the world. Okay. Let's hear.